It's a combination of your schedule and my being out of the country. I don't know if you remember who I am. I want to speak about the prominent subject of this week's Sedra, and that's clothing. The purpose of clothing and what real tznius is all about. Most people think that tznius is the idea of covering the body because the body is risque or something negative and it has to be covered. But if that were true, then if human bodies have to be covered, then most certainly animal bodies should be covered. And I don't know as of yet, maybe things will change tomorrow, anybody who is machmir not to go to the zoo unless the animals are dressed. In fact, the only place I know in the world where they dress their animals is Los Angeles. And that has nothing to do with tznius because they don't dress the people there. So what is the concept of tznius? Before the chait of Adam and Chava, it was clear that a human being is basically a neshama, and that's what we are. We are not bodies with little Casper the Friendly Ghost flitting us around inside of us called a neshama. But we were created as neshamos. We will revert to being neshamos after we leave this world, according to the Rambam, eternally. And that is what we are. We existed as neshamos for many thousands of years before we came into a body in this world, and will exist as neshamas when we leave this world. And being neshamos, we could have remained in the spiritual world and functioned very nicely as a neshama. A neshama in the spiritual world can hear without ears and see without eyes and get around without arms and legs. But when we come into a physical world, it's like an astronaut. As long as the astronaut is on terra firma, on the earth, he can breathe without any oxygen apparatus. He can function without a pressurized suit. He can talk without a radio. But when he goes into outer space, there is no air pressure, so he needs a pressurized suit. There's no oxygen, so he needs an oxygen apparatus to breathe. There's no sound wave, so he needs a radio through which to speak. When he comes back to earth, he takes off the suit. Doesn't need it anymore. Similarly, as long as we were in a spiritual world, we could function very nicely as neshamos. When we came into a physical world, we need a spacesuit, an inner spacesuit to wear to be able to function. We need eyes to see and ears to hear and arms and legs to get around with. When we leave this world, we leave the spacesuit here and we go back to being neshamos. And it could be that's one of the reasons that we express mourning for someone that leaves this world by tearing our clothing. Because it's a sign that only the clothing's been torn away, but the essence of the person still exists. The person's still there. Just the clothing, the suit that he wears in this world has been torn away. Up until the chait of Adam and Chava, which didn't last too long, only a few hours, it was clear that the ikar of the person was his neshama. And the body was merely a tool that the neshama uses to be able to function in this world. Once Adam and Chava sinned, and they used their bodies in contradiction to their neshama, in a way that was counterproductive to the neshama, now it's confusing. Because it can't be that the body is merely a tool of the neshama, because the body is being used against the neshama. And not only that, you can't see a neshama. So maybe there's only a body. So in order to distract attention from the external body and make the statement there's more here than meets the eye, Adam and Chava had to be clothed. You cover the externals in order to make the statement, the ikkar that you see is not the ikkar that there is. There's something here that you can't see that is the main component of the person. That's what tznius is. Whenever you can be distracted by an external and forget about the internal, which is the ikkar, we cover the externals. And therefore, tznius applies to human beings who have a neshama. But an animal, there's no purpose to cover the body of an animal because there is nothing internal, there's just a body. So what you see is what you get, and there's no reason to cover it. It's a creation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's nothing bad about it, negative about it, there's nothing to cover. But a human being who has a neshama, there, in order to distract attention from the externals that could be distracting, you cover it and see the internals. Hold with the questions until you hear the whole idea. And then maybe you're next. Therefore, we find the concept of tznius especially by three things. The first is by the Mishkan. When the Mishkan was finished, the Ribbono Shel Olam says the Medrash, Kan Yofe HaTznius. And the Mishkan was covered on the outside with coverings like a kala. It had a train in the back and a veil in the front. That's how the coverings of the Mishkan looked. Now, the Mishkan obviously was not something risque, and why in the world did the Mishkan have to be covered? And what's the concept of tznius by a building? To illustrate it, I once heard the following story. A relative of Rav Shalom Shvadron Zatzal was by the Kosel on a Shabbos, and they saw an Israeli writing a kvittel on Shabbos and putting it in the wall. So they ran over to him, and they thought maybe somebody's sick at home, and he thinks it's pikuach nefesh that you're allowed to write a kvittel on Shabbos to help save the person's life. So he went over and he said, is this for somebody who's sick? He said, no. He says, I'm the captain of one of the Israeli soccer teams, and we have a championship match this week, and I wrote a request from the wall to win. If that's what the wall is, then it borders on Avodah Zarah. There's no difference between mirror, mirror on the wall or wall, wall on the ground. If you don't understand that the Kosel is important, not because it's a magic wishing wall, but because the Shechina is there, then you can turn the Mishkan into an Avodah Zarah. Therefore, since the externals of the Mishkan were very distracting, gold and silver, and one could get tied up with the externals and forget the main purpose, the Shechina that is stationed in that building, therefore the externals were covered in order to draw attention away from them and to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. Exact same idea as tznius by a human being, only it applies to the Mishkan. The second place where tznius is extra important is by Talmidei Chachamim. A Talmid Chacham has to be extra tzanua in the way he eats, in the way he talks, in the way he dresses. That's why the minig is Talmidei Chachamim wear longer coats. Obviously, there is nothing more risque about the body of a Talmid Chacham than anybody else. So why does he have to be extra tzanua? Because the kavod you have to give to a Talmid Chacham is equal to the kavod you give to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira L'Rabos Talmidei Chachamim. That's a very dangerous thing. Because if you address the person of the Talmid Chacham, it also borders on Avodah Zarah. There are people who make Talmidei Chachamim into idols. And that is not the intention. The intention is to revere the Torah they represent, not the person. And therefore the Talmid Chacham has to distract attention from his person, from his externals, and say, what you have to respect here is what I represent, not what I am. The Torah that I possess, not me. So in order to do that, he has to distract attention from the external, and make the point to say there's more here than meets the eye, that's what you have to address your attention to. And the last thing where tznius is extra special is women. Kodesh Baruch Hu created woman. He, on every aver, said, Tihei tzanua. Why? Because in the secular world, no matter how progressive and liberated the world is, women are still judged mainly on their external attributes. That's why there are Miss Universe and Miss America and Miss Israel pageants. And even though they claim to have refined them, and the women speak about their careers, and they write, they read their poetry, but it's all done in bathing suits, which have me believe that the poetry and the careers are not the ikar. So, since women in the secular world are more or less looked upon as external objects, and from a Torah standpoint, the woman is the ikar kedusha of Klal Yisrael. And I'm not saying that to make you feel good. It's true. Because without going into the fact that the women were approached with the giving of the Torah first or only, and without going into the fact that Chazal say that everything depends on a woman, the Gemara, the Medrash gives a maisa that there was a tzaddik and a tzidkanis who were married, and they got divorced. And the tzaddik married a rishita, and the tzidkanis married a rasha. And in the end, the rishata made her husband the tzaddik into a rasha, and the tzaddikas made her husband the rasha into a tzaddik. And the Medrash says, in case you didn't get the message, hakol toli beisha. You see from here that everything depends on the woman. And the woman has the greatest career, greater than any career that could be, as we see from a woman who had every career, and yet praised herself with one of them. That woman was a leader, a judge, a poetess, a warrior, a truck driver. She drove a chariot. She was everything you could imagine, which any man or woman could ever want to be. She was a prophetess. Her name was Devorah. And when she got carried away and wanted to praise herself, she said, At shekamti Devorah, shekamti not a neviya shofetes mishoreres manhiga, At shekamti aim b'Yisrael. That is the greatest accolade that any person could have, an aim b'Yisrael. It's greater than being a neviya, shofetes, or any of the other things that she was. So aside from all of that, which we're not talking about now, because otherwise we're getting off the topic, but just a simple idea. A woman is the ikar, inner kedusha of Klal Yisrael. How do I know that? Because what determines whether any human being has a holy neshama of a Jew or a different kind of neshama of a non-Jew? What is the only factor? Who your mother is. And up until recently, mothers were women. So therefore, women are the foundation of Kedushas Yisrael. The only exception is somebody who's a ger. But accepting that, the only way to get a Nishmas Yisrael is through a mother. Your mother could be a simple Jewess, and your father could have been the biggest Rasha Goy in the world. You're Jewish. And your father could be the biggest tzaddik, and your mother's not Jewish, you're not Jewish. So a woman creates Kedushas Yisrael. And therefore, in order for a woman to distract attention from her externals, which could attract the attention and make people forget about what the ikar is, she has to be extra tzanua. The word tznius does not mean to cover up something because it's shameful. Just the opposite. The concept of tznius we find in the Gemara in Shabbos. There's a perek called Hamatznia. It has nothing to do with dressing. It has to do with halachas of carrying on Shabbos. To make it simplified, okay, because it's not exactly what it is, but we'll just simplify it for expedience. Normally, in order to be chayiv on Shabbos for carrying, either a chatas if you do it b'shogeg, or skila if you do it b'mezid, you have to carry a shear, a certain amount. If you just carry a little crumb, it's not important enough to get a death penalty. You're not allowed to do it. It's osur. but you don't get a penalty, you don't get a punishment for it. So normally the shear is a grogris. That's the shear of what's it called, of carrying on Shabbos. Okay, the size of a date. The a kebeah, the size of an egg. Okay. And however, there's an exception. One of the exceptions is the following. Let's say you have a piece of your wedding cake that you're saving as a souvenir. Every year Pesach, you sell it with your chametz, and you keep it in the little jewelry box in your drawer, and every once in a while you open it up and look at that stale piece of cake and remember your chasana. Hopefully it's not similar to your marriage, but it's what's it called? But you remember fondly your wedding day. And on Shabbos you forget that it's Shabbos, and you carry out that small piece of cake. Since you hid it away, put it away for safekeeping, you made that important, and even though it's less than the normal shear that you would be chayiv for carrying on Shabbos, you're chayiv for that, because you made it important by hiding it away to protect its importance. That's called hamatznia. So you see that tznias is not hiding something away because it's shameful, just the opposite. It's hiding something away in order to preserve its importance. The body is very important because it is the tool which enables the neshama to function in this world. Without that body, you can't function in this world. So the body is extremely important. So important that even after the neshama leaves, the body has to be treated with tremendous respect, and that's why we bury the body. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu buried Moshe Rabbeinu's body, because that body became holy by being a tool of the neshama. But if you don't understand that the importance of the body is that it serves the neshama, and all you look at the body as an external thing, then basically a person's an animal. And you take all the importance away from that body. So we cover the body and hide it away because we want to protect its importance, not because it's shameful. That is the idea of tznius. So we cover the body to distract attention from it, and in order to make the statement, there's more here than meets the eye. There's another part to this. If that's the case, then tznius should be that you totally cover the body in such a way that you don't know you have a body. So we should have a style that is like everybody walks around in a tent. Right? They have this a frame around them, and the only thing you can see is two eyes sticking out, and otherwise you don't know a person has a body. And that would be ideal, but that's not what tznius is. Tznius, we wear clothing that accents the body, that is, to a certain degree, form-fitting. Shows we have a body. Why? And not only that, but we find that the Torah extols the beauty of the body. Right? For instance, it says that Rachel was Yifas Toar v'Yifas Mareh. We're talking about physical beauty. Sara Imenu was as beautiful at 7, at 20, as she was at 7. Torah went out of its way to say May of the Esrim v'Sheva Shanim. So obviously the Torah cares what Sara looked like. Right? The Torah, what difference did it make? She was Sara Imenu. Who cares what she looked like? Torah cares. Torah cares about what Yosef looked like and says he was Yifei Toar v'Yifei Mara. He's a handsome person. So the Torah does give importance to physical beauty. The question is, though, what does that mean? What is physical beauty? Because it's very subjective and conditional to social mores. I'll give you an example. In deepest Africa, there is a tribe called the Ubangis. They have a quaint custom that when their daughters are young, they put a half saucer in their mouth between their upper lip and their gum and stretch their upper lip. And as they get older, they make a bigger saucer and stretch the lip more. By the time they're your age, their upper lip sticks out about a foot. And that's considered beautiful by the Ubangis, And if you don't have an upper lip that sticks out at least a foot, you'll never find the shidduch by the Ubangis. On the other hand, in America, if you have an upper lip that sticks out a foot, your parents will spend thousands of dollars on an orthodontist, right, to correct it. Otherwise, you'll be having a very hard time finding a shidduch. Right? I had a daughter who needed orthodontic work. I was thinking of sending her to the Ubangis. It would have been much cheaper. But the shidduchim were there a little too black for me, so I decided not to. In any case, so what's beautiful? According to the Americans, a girl with an upper lip that sticks out a foot is not beauty. And according to the Ubangis, that is the epitome of beauty. It says that Esther Hamalka, Esther noses chein be'enei koro'eha. Everybody who saw Esther thought she was charming. How could that be? Either she had a lip that stuck out at foot or she didn't. If she did, she was charming to the Ubangis, but not to the Americans. And if she didn't, she was charming to the Americans, but not to the Ubangis. How could she be noses chein be'enei koro'eha? The answer is, there is a certain kind of beauty that transcends time and place. That's what it says. That Sari Meinu was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. L'chora, from this side of the table, right, a 20-year-old girl is prettier than a 7-year-old girl. So what does it mean that Sara was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7? But there's a certain beauty of the innocence of youth. A 7-year-old girl has that innocent beauty. And that's universal. That's not dependent on culture. That is a universal thing. That's the beauty we're talking about. We're talking about the external beauty that expresses the inner beauty, where you see the beauty of the neshama expressed externally. When you see somebody who is dressed with respect properly, then their external demeanor reflects their internal kedusha. And you see what's on the inside. That is the beauty we're talking about. And that's the second purpose of clothing. Clothing is called levush, because it comes from lo busha. Takes away your embarrassment, your shame. Because if a person is merely an animal, that's a shameful thing. So we don't display our external and give the impression that's all there is to us. We distract attention from it and attract attention that we're more than just a body. Shame, busha, is basically centered around the face. Boshes panim. Why? If you would have to pick a word to describe the face in Hebrew, I wouldn't call it a panim. Panim means inner, and it also is plural. Now, the face is the most external part of your body, right? And kamat, no culture that they totally cover their faces. So it's the part that's exposed, it's external, and it's only one. It's not plural. Even though I do know people who are two-faced, but lamaisa, that's not the way people should be. So you have one face, and it's external. I would call it a chutz. But somehow it got called a panim, which is the opposite. The answer is that the face is the screen on which you can see everything that's going on inside a person. It's written on your face. Guilt is written on your face. Shame is written on your face. Happiness, sadness, you can read it on a person's face. It broadcasts what's going on within you. And it's a multi-screen, because it's not just one monolithic thing that you can see at a time. Sometimes a person could be afraid and happy and scared and sad and all at once. And there's different things you can read on the face at the same time. So it's plural, and it represents what's going on inside. The face is the screen that separates between what's on the inside and what's on the outside. Busha comes from the word, next week, Sedra, Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe loledes minahar. Moshe was tarrying. The word Busha, boshesh, means to be inhibited, to hold back. Not everything a person wants to do or thinks about should be displayed outside because it's not appropriate. And when a person thinks or does things that are not appropriate, his face turns red. It's like a warning signal that there's something that should not be projected outside, that should remain inside, that should remain potential and not be actualized. That's busha. And that busha is related to boshes panim. So clothing are low busha. I shouldn't be embarrassed. I wear clothing in order that I shouldn't be embarrassed and make the statement that I'm an animal. So it takes away a person's busha. Another word for clothing is beged. Beged comes from the word bogeid, which means to rebel. A rebel is a bogeid. Because since the body rebelled against the neshama, that's why you need begadim. That's why you need clothing. Because if the body would have not rebelled against the neshama and just served the neshama, there would be no need for clothing. It would be clear that the body is a tool of the neshama. On the other hand, the clothing are also called michabdusi, that which honors me and gives me honor. Because once you have the body put in its proper place by covering it, now the way you cover it expresses its importance. So you wear clothing that's tasteful, that gives an understanding of what's going on the inside. And it projects who you are and what you are. That's for uniform. And you have much more respect for a policeman who's dressed in a police uniform than if he'd be wearing Bermuda shorts and some colorful shirt. It just does not evoke the same respect. I used to have doctors in Miami. Some of them would make rounds in the hospital in a white coat with black suit pants with a stethoscope around their neck. And when the doctor came dressed like that, you had to feel that here's somebody that, you know, deserves respect. Some of the doctors, however, would go directly from the golf course in their Bermuda shorts and Bermuda shirts with a stethoscope, and it doesn't command the same respect. It's not, even though the clothing doesn't make you a doctor. The clothing is not the ikkar, but it definitely projects what there is on the inside. You should never make the mistake to think the clothing's the ikkar. And unfortunately, well, we'll get to that in a second. In any case, so clothing has two purposes. One, to make the statement that there's something holy here that you can't see, so don't be distracted by the externals. At the same time, to project that holiness externally in a tasteful way. That was the two purposes of the Big Day Kahuna. It says that the clothing of the Kohanim was lekadsho lekahanoli, to sanctify the Kohen. In other words, to cover his externals and say there's more to this Kohen than just his body. He has an inner Kedusha that makes him a Kohen. And therefore we're covering the externals in order that you should understand that's not what to be distracted by. At the same time, the clothing projected that Kedusha in many ways externally and brought it out. When you looked at the clothing of the Kohen, it commanded respect and told you what that Kedusha that's inside the Kohen is. It projected it and expressed it externally. And that's why it was lekavod ulitiferes. It was for honor and glory also. So clothing has both of those functions. The problem is when we don't understand what the inner Kedusha is, and we only look at the clothing, so then people become very insecure, and in order to be able to become secure, have to be mevatel anybody who doesn't look like them. Let me explain that a little bit better. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, so some people came to me and said, this is not like America. In America, people who wear black yarmulkes can be normal people. But here in Israel, whoever wears a black yarmulke is antisocial, anti-Israel, anti just about everything. This was before virtual reality, so I was really surprised that just putting on a black yarmulke like makes you think like that. It was hard to accept. That's what they said. Next week after that, my son, who was about 10, 11 years old, came home from cheder, and he said, the Rebbe told us today that anyone who wears a knitted yarmulke can't be a Yirei Shamayim. It's impossible. Why? Because the Yirei Shamayim escapes through the holes. That was also fantastic. So I didn't want my son to believe that, but I didn't want to contradict his Rebbe either. So I said to him, you know, Shlomi, I was in Mea Shearim last week, and all of the Tolus Aaron Chassidim, Rav Aralus Chassidim, wear big white knitted yarmulkes. Are you going to tell me not one of Rav Aralus Chassidim are Yirei Shamayim? Because the Yirei Shamayim escapes through the holes? He says, well, maybe there's exceptions. I said, fine, let's leave it at that. It's not the yarmulke that determines whether you have Yirei Shamayim or not. It's what's under the yarmulke that determines that. So when, however, people think like that, and they think that all they can identify people by is what kind of clothing they wear, and that becomes the ikker. Clothing is something. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be in this getup. Okay? But there's something to it. It does express something, right, that could be what on the inner, but it's not the main thing. The Chafetz Chaim, he says it's mashal, it got to be something else, but we'll use it for our purposes. So there was once a person who was traveling in a snowstorm, in a wagon, horse and wagon, and he was dead tired. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. He couldn't go on, frozen solid. He stops at an inn, comes in, he says, give me a room. He says, I'm sorry, all the rooms are filled up. He says, there's got to be an empty bed in one of the rooms that you can let me sleep in. He says, no, there's only one empty bed in this hotel. I rented the room to a general, and I promised him that I wouldn't put anybody else in that room. So there's no way. He says, look, I'll pay you triple for what the room is worth. I'm going to only sleep in that bed for 2 hours, from 2 to 4. The general is fast asleep. He'll never know that I was in the room. I'll pay you triple for the room for 2 hours. Just let me have a bed for 2 hours. I says, okay, but you have to go in quietly. Don't wake up the general. I'm going to wake you up at 4 o'clock and make sure you're out of there before the general wakes up. Get dressed quickly. Leave. I don't want the general to ever know I put somebody in that room. Okay. No, he goes, sleeps for 2 hours. The innkeeper comes in, wakes him up at 4 o'clock quietly. He gets dressed very quickly, runs out of the room. And as he's leaving the room, he passes a mirror. And in the mirror, he sees that he's dressed in the general's clothing. He says, you know, that idiot innkeeper woke up the general, forgot to wake me up. Just because you're dressed like the general does not mean that you're the general. The clothing don't make the person, right? If you dress like a doctor, doesn't mean you're a doctor. But if you're a doctor and dress like a doctor, it expresses the fact that you're a doctor. If you dress like a policeman, does not make you a policeman. But if you're a policeman who's dressed like a policeman, it expresses who you are and what you are. When people don't understand that, and they only identify themselves as their externals, then it's a very, very serious situation of what we see around us. And that's the following. The Kotzker Rebbe said two things that I want to put together. He said them in Yiddish. I'm going to say them in Hebrew, because in English it sounds ridiculous, but in Hebrew it still sounds something. And in Yiddish I'd break my teeth, and I don't have that many, too many more to break, so we'll leave it in the Hebrew. In Hebrew it goes like this. Im ani ani, mipnei sha'ani ani, ve'ata ata, mipnei sha'ata ata, oz ani ani ve'ata ata. Aval im ani ani, mipnei sha'ata ata, ve'ata ata, mipnei sha'ani ani, as ein ani ani ve ein ata ata. What does it mean? If I'm me because I know who I am, and you're you because you know who you are, then I have an identity and you have an identity. I'm me and you're you. But if I'm me only because I know I'm not you, I don't know who I am, but I know I'm not you. And you're you only because you know you're not me. You don't know who you are, but you know you're not me. Then neither of us have an identity. Because a negative identity is not an identity. Second thing the Kotzker Rebbe said. Binyan ne'orim stira Ustira Zakenim Binyan. It's a Maimer Chazal. The simple meaning is, when foolish young people build, sometimes that's tearing down. And when older, wiser people tear down, that's building. That's a simple meaning. Said the Kotzker Rebbe, it means something else. Binyan the Arim. You know how a foolish, immature person builds himself up? By tearing other people down. And you know how a wise person tears people down? By building himself up. Put the two things together, and we have the following. Rabbi Twersky, in one of his books, gives the following story. There was a man who felt very insecure, and he felt he could only identify himself by his clothing. And therefore he was afraid to go to the mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur, where he'd have to take off his clothing and he'd forget who he was. So he devised a scheme that he would tie a red ribbon around his finger loosely and go into the mikveh with the red ribbon, and the red ribbon would remind him who he was. So he goes into the mikveh with this red ribbon, and the red ribbon falls off his finger and gets tied around somebody else's finger. They both come out of the mikveh, and the guy's staring at the other guy's finger, and he says, "Look, I know who you are, but who am I? If you only identify yourself by external things, then you have no identity. And if you have no identity, then the only way that you can feel secure is by being mevatel other people and tearing them down, because they make you feel insecure. If the only way you know who you are is by who you're not, then the only way you can feel secure is by knocking people down, because I'm not you." And unfortunately, that's the way most people are today. They only respect people who are exactly like them, and everybody else out there, I don't know who I am, but I know who I'm not. I'm not you, I'm not you, or whatever, and I have to mevatel all of you in order that I should feel secure. But if you know who you are and you have an identity, you know, this is my Mesorah, and these are my Rabbanim, and this is what we hold from, and this is our Minhagim, then I don't feel threatened by other people. I understand there's room for other people too, but I know I'm proud of who I am. But if I don't know who I am, I can only identify myself by external things and by who I'm not, then I have a need to make little and be mevatel other people in order to make myself feel secure. So clothing is an important thing. It's important in making the statement that the ikar of me is not the externals. It's also important to express what the internals are in an external way. But it's not the ikar of a person at all. It's only something that serves as a tool to bring out that inner kedusha that the neshama has. And those were the two purposes of the Big Day Kahuna. Okay, now I'll take questions. Yeah?
I'm just confused about, I understood the innocent, timeless face beauty, but how come a person shouldn't, humanity, whatever, shouldn't have like the face completely exposed, but the body...
No, because the beauty is not just the face. It's the whole expression of your body too. The arms, the legs, covered in the proper way. When you look at a person, right, that is dressed tastefully, okay, you can be attractive. You don't have to be attracting. That's the difference. Clothing can be worn to be attractive because then you give the impression that you're somebody that deserves respect. You're dressing in a tasteful way. And what that is really depends on a person's seichel to know what's tasteful and what's not tasteful.
But what
we it's the entire person that's being presented, not just their face.
But what we consider tasteful is like, let's say, classic, you're just dressing normally. But if you were to put on like something that would be considered normal, classy, tasteful in like olden times, that wouldn't be. So that means it
right.
Is the
every time ev- what is tasteful and what is attractive and gives the proper message, right, depends on time and place. What is the fashion of respectful people, not the fashion to be attracting, but the fashion to be attractive. And there's two different things. So if you dress like the people of your place, your time, that are dressing in the proper way, right, with the proper kavana, we're not talking only about Jews, non-Jews too, then for that time and that place, that is the mode of dress. And it could be in a different time and place, it's not the mode of dress. It changes according to time and place. Yeah.
Would the Rav comment on the importance of, in light of the time and place, would the Rav comment on the importance of clothing vis-a-vis sports and other activities?
Yeah, same thing. Time and place also means that if you're at the beach, and you're at a beach that you're allowed to be at, okay, where there's only women or only men, then you dress befitting the beach. And you don't dress in a way that makes you look like you're from Mars, right? What in the world are you dressed up for a wedding and the seashore? And that's the proper dress in that place and that time. You don't take a shower, right, in your finest chasana array, right? Because that's the time and place to be the way you are in the shower. So it's not just time and place in history, it fits where you are and what message you're giving at that place. And what's proper in each place is what brings out what your what message you're sending. And therefore, shnius is not just covering your body. You could cover every part of your body that has to be covered. But if you cover it in a way that gives a message that is attracting and not attractive, right, distracting, and gives a message that the opposite of what tznius is, then you're not tznuah. And you can wear all the right clothing, but if you act and move your body in such a way that gives a different message, then that's also not tznuah. So it's impossible to be tznuah and not cover your body properly, but you can cover your body properly and still not be tznuah. And Chazal knew which parts of the body, both by men and women, right, are attracting, and those are called erva. Erva comes from the idea of externals. Arum, arema, is something, just a heap, where you can just discern the outside. Iver is a blind person. All he can do is touch the outside of things. He can't see farther in. An arum is a person who's sly. He wants to create a smokescreen, and you shouldn't get into his real intention. All those words of Shamsho Foil Hirsch represent externals. Pritzus is external. Everything that where all you can see is the external and you don't get the internal message, that's the opposite of tznius. Okay, I really plan to speak about four different topics today, but I think that will suffice with that, and we have another chance. Because in Vayakel Pekudei, we go over both of these parshios, and then I'll get what I wanted to speak about all the rest. Okay.